During the season of Lent, we are walking in the footsteps of Jesus, retracing his steps. We started a few weeks ago at the Jordan River where he was baptized. And then we went into the wilderness where he would face temptation for 40 days and 40 nights. We traveled with him to Galilee to a little town called Capernaum where he would heal the sick. Last week, we climbed the mountains to hear the Sermon on the Mount in which he would teach us about what it means to be a part of the kingdom of God. And today we are traveling with him to the Sea of Galilee. Now, it's interesting to me that it's a frequent place in the Gospels. So many of the most beloved episodes and stories of the life and ministry of Jesus take place in and around that body of water. In fact, it's mentioned more than 40 times in the Gospels. And if you read through, I think you would be amazed if you paid attention to just how many times Jesus gets in or out of boats, how many times it mentions that he's walking along the lake shore. Now, we call it the Sea of Galilee, but really it's a lake. It's about 7-8 miles wide. It's about 13 miles long, and at 700 feet below sea level, it is the lowest freshwater lake in the world. The average depth is somewhere between 84, but it also goes up to about 150 feet. It's located in the north of the Holy Land, and at the time, it went by several different names. Sometimes it was referred to as Lake Tiberias, who was one of the rulers at the time. Sometimes it's referred to as Lake Gennesaret. Gennesaret comes from the Hebrew word Gennesaret, that is the word for harp, because it is shaped, if you were to look at it, like a harp. Most of the time, though, it's simply referred to as the Sea of Galilee. Now, the Jordan River flows into the Sea of Galilee at the northernmost point and out of the Sea of Galilee at the southernmost point, and it forms an invisible line from top to the bottom, and fishermen in those biblical times would oftentimes speak of crossing over the lake, which could simply mean moving from one side of that invisible line to the other. And it would often take, we are told, about 2 hours to get from one side to the other. Now, Josephus, who was a first century historian, records that around that time there were about 230 boats populating that Sea of Galilee. Fishermen that worked the lake most oftentimes at night. The story that we're going to be looking at this morning, that takes place there on the lake, is once again from Mark's Gospel, although it's found in all three of the synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And as mentioned a couple of weeks ago, Mark is the first of the Gospels, the earliest, but it's also the shortest. And as I also mentioned in Mark, Mark seems to be in a hurry. The story moves quickly, immediately. It's one of the favorite words that gets repeated over and over again. Mark always seems to be asking questions. Questions like, what about you? What about you? Do you get it yet? Do you see why Jesus came into the world? Or are you stuck like the disciples, still trying to figure out, unable to see the love and the grace, the hope and the joy, the challenge, as well as the character that Jesus teaches and brings to us? Now, where we pick up the story this morning, he has been with the masses, teaching and preaching. He's been healing. He's been casting out demons. And then, well, then this happens.
The scripture reading today is from Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41. Here begins the reading. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let's go across to the other side." And leaving the boat behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with him. Then a great storm arose, and the winds beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased. There was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? "Have you still no faith?" And then they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" The word of God for the people of God.
Who is this man? Who is this man, the disciples ask, and in many ways their question is our question. In fact, the argument could be made that we come each week and gather in this sacred space to ask that very question, to ask ourselves, who is this Jesus and who are we as his followers? Who is this man that even the winds and the sea obey him? There he is, crossing over in the night. Jesus is exhausted. He's been teaching. He's been healing people. He's been getting things done, meeting people's needs. And he's asleep in the back of the boat, and all of a sudden, this storm whips up out of nowhere. He's asleep in the back of the boat. Now, the Greek word that is used there to describe the storm is seismos, which is oftentimes translated as tempest. You may recognize seismos as being part of seismology, the study of earthquakes. In other words, this is one of those storms that shook the earth. Some translation says it was a furious squall. Well, the wind was fierce, the rain poured, the waves rocked the boat, breaking over the sides of the boat until, as Mark says, it was nearly swamped. Now, keep in mind that many of those disciples at that time were fishermen. And so they were used to being out on the boat, especially at night. And so the fact that they were scared by this storm means that it must have been pretty bad. There they were in this terrible storm at night, several miles from shore, in water somewhere between 84 and 150 feet deep. And the disciples wake him and said, Teacher, don't you even care if we drowned?" And Jesus responds, essentially, "No, not really." I can almost hear him say, "Did the fact that I was asleep in the boat answer that question for you? Don't you even care?" I can picture him in that moment just shaking his head. "Don't you guys get it? Don't you guys get it? I mean, haven't you been watching? Haven't you been paying attention when I've been chasing out demons, as I've been making lame people walk, blind people see? Haven't you been paying attention? Why are you so afraid?" Mark says that in that moment he got up and he rebuked the wind. And he said to the waves, "Peace, be still." And in that moment the wind calmed. The waves settled. Now, we like this story, don't we? We like this story in part because we can relate. We can relate because I think just about all of us have felt at some point in our life like we were on a sinking ship in the middle of a storm. When the winds howl and the waves crash and it feels like you're going down, I'm willing to bet that just about all of us have had a similar situation facing some sort of a storm. And it may have nothing to do with weather. It may have nothing to do with a boat. But we find ourselves terrified by whatever it is that life throws at us. It could be a horrible illness that strikes us, or maybe someone we love, a tragic accident, a horrible divorce. We find ourselves unemployed, any number of things that can bring us to our knees. And both individually, maybe collectively, we face those strong winds, those huge waves in the middle of the night. And sometimes we have nothing to cling to. We don't even have life jackets. We know what that feels like. And I hate to be the one to tell you that if you've not faced a situation like that, chances are that you will. Because none of us get through this life unscathed. We like this story because we can relate. A couple things about storms. First, I think storms reveal, and then also I think storms expose. You see, it's in the midst of those storms of life that we find out what we're made of. It's in that midst of those horrific moments when we find ourselves on our knees, when we discover who we are, what type of person we are, what type of person we are becoming. About 25 years ago, my father was in an industrial accident. It cost him one of his legs. It almost cost him his life. He was rushed into the emergency room, covered in diesel fuel. He was barely hanging on. I rushed out. I was living in Atlanta at the time. I flew out to the West Coast and was there a couple days later when there was a knock on his hospital room. He was asleep, and so I walked over and I answered the door and stepped out into the hall to talk to these two nurses who explained to me with tears in their eyes that they were the nurses in the emergency room that cared for him when they brought him in after the accident. They went on to explain to me that he was so kind. He was so gracious. He was so appreciative of everyone that was taking such good care of him. We were so moved by that, he said. We were so moved that we wanted to come check on him to make sure that he's okay. You see, the storms of life, they don't build character. They reveal the character that was there all along, and we discover in the midst of those moments, in the midst of those storms, the essence of our integrity. We discover in those moments what we are made of. Well, the disciples. The disciples, they come undone. They start to panic. The storm reveals for them an anxiety, a lack of peace, a lack of faith. And Jesus says, "Why are you so afraid? Do you not have any faith at all?" You see, the storms reveal all sorts of things about the disciples. Just look at what the storm drags to the surface. "Aren't you guys further along than that?" Jesus seems to ask. "Were you really worried? Look at what this storm has revealed in you," he says. I saw an interview a while back. The name of the man was John Gaylord. I don't know much about him, except that he was diagnosed with an adrenal carcinoma. I don't know what that is, but it sounds pretty bad. And I also know that he was given only 3 months to live upon that diagnosis. And about a month after that diagnosis, he was interviewed. And in that interview, he said, "God has provided for me so much through the years, and I know that God's going to be waiting for me at the end of the time. And I've had great peace and great joy in terms of going through this experience. Because my family, my friends, whatever I've needed, God has provided. People have shown up. They've done whatever. And I have all the confidence in the world that I will be provided for." Did I mention that John has less than 3 months to live when he makes that statement? And the words that he used, did you hear? He used words like peace and joy, like confidence. Notice that he didn't use words like anxious or stressed or worried. On Thursday morning, as I was writing this sermon, looking at my notes, I got to this point and I thought for a minute. And then I decided to enter into a little practice of my own, and I sat down and I started writing out all of the things that I've been stressed and worried and anxious about in the last couple of weeks. And I gotta tell you, it was a longer list than I would have liked. And as I stood looking at this list, I thought to myself, I wonder what John would think if I were to show him this list. This one who has less than 2 months to live. I wonder what John would say of the things that are on my list. Instead, he uses words like peace and joy and confidence. What has the storm revealed in his life? Well, you heard what he said. "I've been taken care of every step of the way. I'm going to be fine." You see, for most of us, so much of our lives is spent chasing, desiring, wanting, hoping, pursuing, wishing, running after, chasing after, longing for whatever it is that might come next. And we're here, but really we want to be there. We want that. And if we could just get that, well, then everything would be fine. But then something happens, and life brings us to our knees, and you suffer, and you have to go through, and all you have is this. And you can't rely on that because you don't know if that's ever going to come. All you have is this. And so in that moment, you don't wish those storms upon anyone, but yet in that moment, you find out who you are right now without any of that. You see, our storms reveal our core character, who we are, the essence of who we are, and what it is that we cling to in those moments. And sometimes it reveals some sort of triviality about some of the stuff that we worry and we stress about. And sometimes they reveal what it is that we have built our house upon. And when you see it, sometimes it can be stunning. Because those storms, they reveal things about us. And sometimes they expose. You see, there's something else going on here, too. It's much more subversive. That Jesus wakes up and he rescues the disciples. He rescues them from the storm. And as I said, we love this story because we want to be rescued from the storms that we face. We want to be rescued, but sometimes I'm willing to bet that it's the storms that rescue us. How many of you know someone who went through something awful, horrific, unspeakable, but yet in the midst of it all, on the other side of the story, they say, you know, that storm, it saved me. Because all of a sudden, my priorities shifted. A sense of what really matters and what doesn't, all of a sudden, it just flipped on its head. I read a fascinating book last year called Between Two Kingdoms, a memoir of life interrupted. It's written by a woman by the name of Saleka Jawad. And I can't recommend the book highly enough. The story is, her story, is that in the summer after she graduated from college, at the age of 22, she was diagnosed with leukemia. And she was given that summer a 35% chance of survival. And here she was at 22 years old, her life is completely interrupted. The life that she had imagined for herself, the life that she was about to begin, has simply gone up in flames. And she would spend the next 4 years fighting for life, living between two kingdoms, between the kingdom of the sick and the kingdom of the well. You see, in that time, she discovered with incredible clarity who she was and what she wanted most out of life. She said in that moment, all of the artifice faded away. Everything that I thought was real, much of it turned out to be artificial. And in that moment, I became crystal clear, not just about the type of people that were in my life, but more importantly, the type of people that I wanted in my life. And what mattered most. She talks in the book about having incredibly limited energy in the course of those treatments. And she would say that on most days, I could get about three things done. That's all I had the energy for. I knew in any given day that I might be able to write an email, to have a conversation with a friend, and maybe watch a movie, though I'd probably have to stop in the middle in order to take a nap. And I knew that I could only get probably three things done, so each morning I would think to myself, what are the three most important things that I want to get done today? And now, she says, in the kingdom of the well, the kingdom of the healed, I still do that. Each morning I wake up and think, what are the three most important things that I want to make sure that I get done today? What will not just be the most important, but what will be the most meaningful things that I want to do with this day, and make those things my top priority? You see, it helped her give her a sense of perspective, not just on the predicament that she faced, but more than that. It showed her a way to reimagine her understanding of what it meant to be a part of a community. It gave her a sense of connection so that in other times when she felt herself isolated, alone, it helped give her a path forward. You see, sometimes it feels like the storm is trying to kill you, but it ends up rescuing you in the end. Maybe you had a time in your life when you were facing layoffs and you feared losing your job, and so you prayed, God, I need to be rescued from losing this job. But maybe after losing that job, you came to the realization that that was the rescue that you needed, that you were stuck, that you didn't love that job the way that you once did, and you needed a new start, but yet you didn't have the opportunity, you didn't have the courage to step out, and all of a sudden that storm was an invitation to start over, to think of things in a whole new way. And so maybe that conflict, that suffering, that destruction, that mess, maybe your prayer should be in that moment, what might this be rescuing me from? Because sometimes the storms save us. So this Lenten season, as we ask ourselves hard questions, do you find yourself in a storm desperately trying to get out of it, trying to avoid it? And maybe the lesson in this moment is not, God, help me get out of this, but rather, okay, God, I'm in this, and you're with me. What is it in this moment that I need to be saved from? What is it that I need to be rescued from? Because Jesus stands up and he says to us calmly, peace, be still. And when he said that, the wind stopped and the waves calmed and the storm settled. But what we need to make sure that we don't miss in this story is that when he says that, he's not just talking to the weather. He's not just talking to the weather, that he's talking to us, that he's talking to any of us who've been hit by storms of life. And he tells us to be still and to know that we are in the presence of God, a God who loves us and promises never to forsake us, never to abandon us. Isn't it true that God never promises to take us away from life's experiences, but so much more importantly, promises to walk with us through all of them? Because sometimes we face storms with a leaky boat, but never are we alone. Never are we promised that there won't be storms or that we won't be terrified from time to time. But yet the gospel story points to the truth that even in the midst of the storms, that Jesus will be with us, that we don't need to be afraid. Peace, he says. Be still, he says. He's not just talking to the weather.